I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Philip Slayton joins me again. The best-selling author has written a new book, Mayors Gone Bad. It's an engaging read about the sort of mayors we have had in Canada as of late. He looks at the colorful characters that obviously include the former Toronto mayor, Rob Ford, and his exploits, but other mayors like Peter Kelly of Halifax and Gerard Tremblay of Montreal, both of whom resigned from office. There's Michael Applebaum, who faces criminal charges, also from Montreal, and Larry O'Brien of Ottawa, who was acquitted of criminal charges. Joe Fontana, London, Ontario's mayor, who was convicted of fraud and placed under house arrest. There are mayors like Susan Fennell of Brampton, who was investigated for possible criminal use of city funds, and Sam Katz of Winnipeg, who faced conflict of interest allegations, as did Hazel McCallion of Mississauga. There's a lot in this book, and it presents the stories of these troubled mayors and offers up possible solutions. We'll discuss why and just how powerless the job of mayor is and how revisiting the Constitution might address some of those concerns. It's interesting, the sort of folks who end up in municipal government as well. Philip Slayton authored the best-selling Lawyers Gone Bad and was first on the program when his book Mighty Judgment, How the Supreme Court Runs Your Life, was published in 2011. Philip Slayton has been a law clerk at the Supreme Court of Canada, dean of a Canadian law school, and senior partner of a major Canadian law firm. He is president of Penn Canada. PhilipSlayton.com is the website for more. The book is published by Viking. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Philip Slayton. Mr. Slayton, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Fine.
So before we start talking about the book, I have been following you for years now on this video blog that you and your daughter do, Gab and Dad.
Oh, yeah, Gab and Dad.
Yeah.
Movie reviews.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you don't do that as much anymore, I notice.
No, we don't, for various reasons. I mean, we did it for several years. It became kind of tricky to do. We got involved in other things. We still did occasionally, but not with the regularity that we once did.
You're still a movie fan, though, right?
Oh, yeah, we're great movie fans.
Yeah. So you go through this book of yours, Mayors Gone Bad, and you see all these recent mayors in this country, and you think, wow, there's been a lot of colorful folks.
You could say that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think's happened in our political system, say?
Well, I mean that's the most important question, isn't it? It seems, I mean, you expect occasionally somebody to put a foot wrong or to behave in a silly way in life in general. But it seemed to me, when I started thinking about doing this book maybe 3 years ago or so, it seemed to me that there was an extraordinarily large number of these people in Canada. Much more than you would expect, much more than seemed to be reasonable, if you can say that. So I started to wonder, like, why is that? What's going on here? And that's when I started looking into it, started writing the book. And the conclusion I came to, the big conclusion I came to, was that the Canadian political system, particularly when it comes to cities, is so dysfunctional that it does not attract the right people to participate in it, first of all. And secondly, once people are in it, it's a fertile breeding ground for all kinds of bad behavior. Now, let me explain what I mean by this. The central problem is that most people think that the cities are probably the single most important level of government, because the cities are the level of government that provide most people with essential services on a daily basis, which you cannot say so much about provincial and certainly the federal government.
Right.
So the cities are very important. I mean, what they do for us as people who live in cities is very important, but they conspicuously lack, and mayors conspicuously lack, the political power and the economic tools that they need to do what they're supposed to do. So there's this built-in dysfunction to the whole system of governance in this country.
So does the dysfunction then, does that attract a certain kind of politician, a certain kind of person to run for office?
Well, I think that's a partial explanation of what we have been seeing, yes. Because somebody who really understands what's going on, and somebody who may be very committed to cities and want to do all sorts of things to improve cities, but understands what's going on, understands that as a participant in municipal government, and as a mayor, for example, there's in fact very little they can do. They're doomed to defeat. They're doomed to disappointment. They're doomed to frustration and anger. They would say, you know what, I don't think I'll do that. I think I'll find something else to do. So often it's the unsophisticated, the unwary, the folks who don't kind of get it, who end up drifting into the job of mayor. Now, that's not always true. Mm-hmm. For example, the mayor you have in Vancouver may be an exception to that, and there are other possible exceptions to that, but it's often true. So you get people, I mean, a startling case in point, for example, is Larry O'Brien, who was mayor of Ottawa, and after he was elected mayor of Ottawa, he discovered it was for a four-year term and not a three-year term. He didn't even know how long he'd been elected for. So, you know, and Larry O'Brien is, you know, was a very shrewd and successful businessman, and he's a very likable guy. I interviewed him. But he knew bugger all about municipal politics. He had no idea what he was getting into. The other thing that happens, I think, is you get people who do understand municipal politics, who do know what it's about, but are buoyed up by optimism, they're buoyed up by a sense that they can beat the system, they can actually do it, they can get the province on their side, they can get the funding they need, and then end up being frustrated and disappointed while they act as mayor. An example of that would be Naeed Nenshi of Calgary.
Mm-hmm. And so that which makes it attractive for this certain kind of person to run for municipal office, yet they still do it. I mean, all these mayors are different, but is your sense that there were some mayors who were looking to, say, use that office to go to higher office, say, to the provincial or federal level?
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, there is a whole category of politician, professional politician in this country and in other countries, who want, you know, a political job. I mean, sometimes they don't seem to mind too much whether it's provincial or whether it's federal or whether they're a mayor. So there's a lot of movement around. So you have, for example, let's say the current mayor of Ottawa, Jim Watson, uh-huh, who previously was a Ontario cabinet minister. You have, let's say, Glenn Murray was mayor of Winnipeg, resigned midterm to run for federal office. Now he's an Ontario cabinet minister. You have Joe Fontana, who was a federal cabinet minister and then became mayor of London. So there's a lot of movement amongst various governmental levels in a variety of directions. And these are people who are professional politicians. They want, they need a political job. Often they're not particularly qualified for anything else. So they do it. And they, I think, on the whole, turn out not to be good mayors when they become mayor.
At the same time, though, a lot of these mayors, you look at Rob Ford, for example. I mean, that was a spectacle in and of itself, but he remained very popular.
Yes, he did. He's still very popular.
Yeah.
And his brother, Doug Ford, almost beat John Tory in the last Toronto municipal election.
That's right, yeah.
Pretty close.
Right.
I mean, Rob Ford is... Well, they're all unique, but Rob Ford, if you can say this correctly, is particularly... And there's nothing nobody like Rob Ford. I mean, in some respects, he was a disastrous mayor. We all know that. But in other respects, he had a certain appeal to a large portion of the population of Toronto. He was anti-establishment, or at least he positioned himself that way. He was for the little guy. He was very different from John Tory, you know, who before... got into politics, ran Rogers, you know, he was a very successful lawyer and wealthy businessman. So I think Rob Ford had and still does have an appeal to a certain kind of Torontonian, and there were a lot of them.
You also look at someone like Hazel McCallion, who had problems in Mississauga, ethical
yes,
problems, yet remained very popular. So
yes,
it seems that these politicians on the municipal level... have some sort of protection, I guess, that a provincial or federal politician doesn't have. I mean, they remain in office most of the time, don't they?
Yeah, that may be. I mean, Hazel McCallion is a phenomenon. I mean, she was mayor, as you know, mayor of Mississauga into her 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was mayor of Mississauga for, I don't know, I can't remember exactly how long, over 40 years. She took Mississauga from really almost kind of small rural community to you know, one of the most worst examples of urban sprawl with all the problems that accompany that. So I think what she did to Mississauga, many people at least think, is not good. Uncontrolled development. Uncontrolled development partly to have a constant expanding tax base, which now can't expand anymore because there's no room for development. And meanwhile, as you know, she was twice the subject of a judicial inquiry, serious judicial inquiry, Both times she was found to be in conflict of interest. Once, very serious conflict of interest involving her son and a real estate transaction. But she was amazing. She was able to not only brush this off, but in fact, for reasons that I never understood, declare victory. In fact, she should have been brought to book. I mean, she should have been held to account for these egregious conflicts of interest. So that's why I'm a bit of a contrarian on Hazel McCallion.
Yeah, a lot of people like her in this country, don't they?
Well, I think they do. She's a personality. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, one of the points I make in There's Gone Bad is, you know, politics is entertainment, right?
Yeah.
There's a tremendous overlap between the worlds of politics and the worlds of entertainment. And Hazel McCallion, you know, was entertaining. And Rob Ford was entertaining. And that can get you a long way. I mean, people may not understand the nuances and intricacies of some sort of municipal issue, but they like you know, a good laugh. They like a person who seems to be agreeable and entertaining when watch them on TV. And so there's a lot of that going on, too, I think.
And that's mayors all over the world. I mean, you look at Boris Johnson, say, in London. He has that same sort of appeal, that same sort of attention towards him.
Absolutely. Boris Johnson is a very good example of that. My favorite example is the former mayor of Reykjavik, Iceland, Jón Gnarr, who actually was a stand-up comic. And started his political party, which is known as the Best Party, as a joke. but then he suddenly found himself mayor of Reykjavik, and he said, the joke backfired. But here's the interesting thing. Jón Gnarr, by all accounts, was an excellent mayor of Reykjavik, which suggests perhaps we need more stand-up comics as mayors.
So someone who, I mean, we've already touched on Rob Ford, and he was, you know, fodder, obviously, for the late-night comics over his tenure. That whole business in Toronto and the attention on him and the city, did that change, I mean, the sort of quality of leader at City Hall? I mean,
let me just say, first of all, this about the whole Rob Ford thing. I mean, Rob Ford's personal behavior was undoubtedly pretty scandalous. He was a man, let's say, to put it politely, of great personal eccentricity, and he came under a lot of criticism, probably rightly for that. But in the case of Toronto and the case of Rob Ford, it was just one, let us say, highly eccentric person at the top. Contrast that to what was happening more or less at the same time in the city of Montreal, in the city of Laval, which is, I think, the third largest city in the province of Quebec, where you basically had a municipal administration that was corrupt and rotten from top to bottom. You basically had a municipal government that was run by the mob. And now a former mayor of Montreal and a former mayor of Laval are facing very serious criminal charges and may well end up spending a considerable period of time in jail. So that is a wholly different situation and far more worrying, far more egregious, far more fundamental than having sort of a crack-smoking clown as your mayor.
But I remember during the whole Rob Ford hubbub, the city council there stripped the mayor of some of his powers. So yeah. Now that you have John Tory in there, is he effective at all?
Well, I mean, the point about any mayor, I think, and including John Tory, is that even without some of their powers being stripped away, as happened with Rob Ford, as you're quite right about that, there's very little they can do. I mean, take a look at the city of Toronto. I'm looking out of my window at CN Tower right now. Take a look at the city of Toronto. We have serious problems here. Let me just pick one. We have a very bad, internationally embarrassing system of public transport that needs massive investment to be fixed. And that's a big problem for a city. Now, Tory says the right things, but he doesn't have the money even close to what it takes to fix that. He has to go to Queen's Park, to the provincial government. And the provincial government, which, by the way, is also broke and relies on equalization payments from the federal government, fobs him off with vague promises. Yes, we'll do something, you know, 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, 4 years down the road. It's always promises. It's always jam tomorrow, never jam today. So meanwhile, John Tory called, for example, I could give you several examples, but the one I'll pick is this. He called a press conference to announce that the city has developed a new raccoon-proof garbage can. You know, that's like a full-court press conference to announce that. And you look at that and you say, you know, help us. God help us. I mean, if this is what the mayor is doing or can do, I'll give you another example. in, I think, January, he had a press conference, a very elaborate press conference, to announce that on the King Street streetcar, they would now allow rear door boarding to try and speed up the service. I mean, this is the mayor of Toronto. Now, meanwhile, you know, if I can be excused a little hyperbole, meanwhile, the city is sort of slipping into the lake while these, you know, bold new initiatives are being made. I don't really fault John Tory. I think he's a smart guy. But he doesn't have what he needs to do what has to be done, and nor does really any mayor in Canada.
So you call in the book for reforms to the system,
yes.
and that would involve, say, constitutional reform, right?
Ideally, it would, yes.
Yeah, do you think the provincial governments, the federal government itself of any stripe, would be willing to go through that process of reform?
Well, I mean, ideally, I think we should reform the Constitution of Canada. The Constitution of Canada, the Canada Act, only has one mention of the cities, of municipalities, and that's a provision which gives power over them to the provinces. I mean, remember that it was written, really, the time when cities didn't have the enormous importance and the social, economic, political dominance that they now have. It's totally outmoded. It's absurd that Prince Edward Island has the seat of the constitutional table and the city of Vancouver or the city of Toronto does not. We should fix that. However, we are lumbered with an appallingly difficult system to amend the Constitution,
right,
which requires the provinces to agree. And so the idea that the provinces will say, sure, absolutely, yeah, we'll surrender all kinds of powers in favor of the cities, is ludicrous. It isn't going to happen. So we need some kind of compromise solution, a solution that gets us at least some of the way there, and is maybe feasible. And so what I suggest in the book is, I'm borrowing a phrase from the United Kingdom, is Devo Max, that all the major cities in this country go to their provinces and have a hardball negotiation with them to have new provincial legislation governing the city, and certainly in the case of the big cities, specific to that city, so-called charters. And this new legislation would bestow upon the cities the powers that they need, particularly the fiscal powers they need, the powers to raise money themselves. And then this legislation would also have what is called, lawyers like to call, procedural enhancement, entrenchment in it, which would stop the province reneging on these grants easily. And that would at least take us some way towards where I think we should be.
And would that involve, say, a city tax, an income, say, a sales tax in a particular city?
Yes, it could easily involve that. I mean, many cities elsewhere in the world have these kinds of taxes. I think we need perhaps city sales taxes. We need perhaps city income taxes. I mean, right now, today, literally today, we have a debate in the city of Toronto about how are we going to pay to tear down the Gardiner Expressway, which everybody agrees needs to be torn down. So it's a dysfunctional eyesore. It'll cost apparently about $1 billion. Everybody agrees it should be done. Problem: city does not have $1 billion. So how are they going to pay for it? So all kinds of crazy ideas, you know, all kinds of new toll roads, all kinds of ideas being kicked around to figure out how to pay for that. Well, I mean, that's a good illustration of the desperate need for new revenue sources. But Joe, there's a flip side to this. And that is that the electorate has to wise up. It has to recognize that if it wants to have the things that it needs and should have, and that will make its life better, it's going to have to pay for it. So it's going to have to agree to accept politically new taxes. Now, in your city, I believe, there's a referendum at the end of this month, in a few days.
Yeah, that's right.
About whether the sales tax should be increased to pay for better transit. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
And they want to increase the sales tax by half of 1%, correct?
Yeah, and then the money would be used to fund transit or infrastructure programs with regards
to
transit.
Right, which is desperately needed. And all the polls show is going to be soundly defeated, right?
That's right.
Well, that's a problem of the electorate. I mean, how do they think the infrastructure, improved infrastructure, is going to be paid for? How do they think transit is going to be improved? I mean, who's going to pay for it? There's only one person can pay for it, and that's them. And you know what? They should pay for it, because it would make everybody's life better. Taxes are the price we pay for civilization. Taxes is what funds the collective good that we can't get by ourselves, individually.
I guess the problem is, and this doesn't apply just to here in Metro Vancouver, but elsewhere, is that when we read your book, we see these screwy mayors as they are. We don't want to endow them with say, more money, more power.
Well, that's right. I mean, several people have made that point to me. I mean, you think, you know, the system is badly broken and the mayors are all crazy. Why give them more money and power?
Right.
And I take the point. But I think, I hope that if municipal politics was made rational, if municipal politics really subtly mattered in a way that it doesn't matter at the minute, if those things happened, people would rise to the occasion. The kind of people that have been elected before perhaps wouldn't be elected again. And the whole thing would become a more serious and fruitful exercise. And by the way, one more point I want to make,
sure.
which we haven't touched on, and that is Vancouver does have one considerable advantage, I think, and that is that you're the only city in Canada that has a party politics system in your municipal government.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much in favor of that because I think it brings a certain direction and discipline to municipal politics that you don't otherwise get. I mean, in Toronto, for example, it's a total shambles. It's a free-for-all. Larry O'Brien, who was the mayor of Ottawa, said to me, his councillors all belong to the same political party, the party of me. So I think you're fortunate in having a party political system at the municipal level of Vancouver.
We're also the only city that doesn't have wards, so...
That's right. Yeah. So citywide elections. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but it may well be a good thing in the sense people get elected on a vision for the city as opposed to, you know, looking out for their little piece of it.
You write in the book, I mean, it's not all doom and gloom. You have three mayors in this country, Naheed Nenshi in Calgary, Don Iveson in Edmonton, and Mr. Robertson here in Vancouver, referred to as the Western Triangle of Goodness. Did you come up with that term, or...?
No, I borrowed that. I think I do acknowledge that I borrowed it. It was from a Globe and Mail reporter who describes them as that. But I like the term.
Yeah.
But again, the point I'd make there is that it isn't as much doubt that Nenshi and Iveson and Robertson are smart, well-intentioned people who really want to kind of do something. But they labor under the same disability, essentially, as Rob Ford did, or Gerard Tremblay of Montreal did, or Peter Kelly of Halifax did. And so even though they might have done good things, even great things, as things stand at the minute, they're not able to do so because they don't have the powers they need. I mean, I think Nenshi fairly recently has demonstrated frustration and disappointment, even anger, at his inability to do what he wants to do. I mean, Nenshi and Iveson in Alberta have been trying hard for quite some time, since each of them has been a mayor, in fact, trying to get city charters from the provincial government with enhanced powers. They have not had a sympathetic hearing.
But are those three in particular, say, reformers who have the best shot at changing the institution of cities?
Well, I think there's a general consensus that they are or could be, if they were properly endowed with powers, effective mayors. But I mean, particularly Nenshi.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Iveson, maybe somewhat less so, is my perception, Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there seem to be a cut above what we in Central and Eastern Canada have been suffering from.
Philip, this is a great book, and I've enjoyed reading it and the conversation today. Congratulations, continued good luck with it.
Thank you, and good to support you.
PhilipSlayton.com is the website. The book is called Mayor's Gone Bad. It's published by Viking. It's author Philip Slayton. Join me on the line from Toronto in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.